Blog Talk Radio.
Your home for Purdue football news. Welcome to the Golden Black Radio pregame show as we get you set for Saturday's kickoff. Now here's your host, Kyle Chardon.
It's the Boilermakers' most anticipated game in years as Purdue welcomes in number 2 Ohio State in prime time in Ross-Ade Stadium Saturday. I'm Kyle Charters, Matt Stevens, Brian Newbert, and Alan Karpik here for the Golden Black Radio pregame show as 3-3 Purdue hosts 7-0 Ohio State. Matt, I think that's pretty safe to say this week, isn't it? It's been a lot that the Boilermakers have put behind this game in anticipation of welcoming in the number 2 team in the country. Purdue does so as a pretty good underdog. Last I saw a little bit earlier today, around 12 points, Purdue is the underdog. That has moved a little bit from the opening line, narrowed up a little bit, but still Purdue a double-digit dog to Ohio State, and with good reason, the Buckeyes have been pretty good this year.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with Jeff Brown's assessment, is that I think there's a lot of parity in college football, but there might be two teams at the top that are right now considering themselves elite. One is Alabama. The other might be Ohio State, just with the way that they're running roughshod over everybody that's not named Penn State. And, you know, the way that they were able to escape that game in Happy Valley, you look at their other opponents and they've been double-digit wins. And it's not like they've been, you know, they've been ducking people either. They played TCU in Texas and beat them by double digits. And, oh, by the way, they've been doing this all without, you know, Nick Bosa. And it's an idea that, you know, they may have issues and then they may give up a lot of big plays in the pass game, which kind of plays into Purdue's hand, but they have transformed themselves into one of the more dynamic passing offenses in all of college football, which is not something that's ever said all that often around the Ohio State campus. But Dwayne Haskins is a guy that has Heisman Trophy candidate potential, and he'll probably, if all things keep going the way they're going, he's probably going to be one of the people that are sitting there for the announcement in New York later on this year. So Ohio State's got a lot going for it, and they have a nice little stretch here starting with this game that they feel like they can put themselves in a comfortable playoff position with games against Purdue and Michigan State, and then obviously they have the finale in Michigan at the end of the year.
It's sort of interesting, Alabama and Ohio State separating themselves perhaps from the rest of the field. Those two teams also seem to have discovered the forward pass this season, even though they've been really, really good in past seasons with the formulas that they have used to win games. But you mentioned it, Dwayne Haskins has been really good, really good at throwing the ball, and Ohio State sort of has gotten behind him a little bit, as Jeff Brom said earlier this week, use the pass to set up the run, which just seems is opposite of what Ohio State has done in the past, but it's a pretty good formula that has led to some big wins this year for Ohio State.
You know, it's a formula that Urban Meyer really hasn't used either. If you go all the way back to when he was at Utah, I mean, Alex Smith was a dual threat quarterback, and they ran it just as many times as they threw it. All through the success that he had with Tim Tebow, again, a guy that ran it 50% of the time and then threw it the other 50% of the time. It was not his best skill, was throwing the ball vertically down the field. You know, you look at what he's done at Ohio State. You know, JT Barrett, I thought, did throw the ball very well down the field when he was asked to. But Ohio State also ran the ball, you know, with Ezekiel Elliott and backs that they've had in the past that were very, very productive. You know, they really have only shown this offense one time under Urban Meyer since he's taken over, and that was when Cardale Jones basically took over for an injured JT Barrett, and they just kind of threw it all over the parking lot and then won the national title that way. It reminds me a lot of that. And Jeff Brom said he looked at the film and he said, I recognize this offense. It's kind of what I run here. And he called it very, very entertaining. And it just seems like Ohio State's playing to their strengths right now, Kyle, because, you know, I talked with Kevin Noone, and you'll hear that interview later on in the show, but their interior line to me, is, at least to him, have kind of been developing as younger players and experienced starters. And that's why I don't think they've gotten off, with the run game as much as they did last year when they ran it for, the leading rusher for over 1,400 yards. So, I think for the first time in a long time, Urban Meyer has basically kind of had to flip the script and ride his quarterback all the way to a title. And I think it's allowed Ohio State to kind of feel more comfortable with its developing defense as well, because they've been able to get up on people and then they've been able to kind of play a more of a prevent style defense. And that's why I think you're seeing a lot of those big plays being put over the top of Ohio State, but they do have problems on defense, and they've just had to counter that by having to score more points. And I thought I saw something, Kyle, that was interesting with Ohio State's drives as well. And this would back up them flipping the script, which is, I don't think they've had many scoring drives over 4 minutes long this year. And in fact, I think it's probably been one or two, which is incredible with the amount of points that they're putting up. So they like to hit you, and they like to hit you really, really quick. And so I think this has the makings, certainly with what Jeff Brohm wants to do on offense, this has the makings of a shootout on Saturday night. And I think that maybe the first team to 50 might win.
Nick Bosa, of course, will not play. He won't play for Ohio State ever again. He wasn't expected to play in the game anyway. But, Ohio State's numbers still tell you they can get after the quarterback. They still lead the Big Ten in sacks per game. Purdue will have to keep David Blough upright as much as possible. Cole Herdman seems like he could be a factor in that if he plays. I think this is an important game if Purdue can get him back, because he is probably the most complete tight end from a blocking and receiving point of view, whereas, Bryson Hopkins can really get down the field a little bit. What's the status of Herdman going into Saturday's game?
He wore a red jersey throughout the entire entire week of practice this week, Kyle. And so Jeff Brohm has used the word that he's famously used a whole lot now, which is he's optimistic that Cole will play. Well, he was optimistic last week too, and Cole got out there in pregame warmups and just wasn't ready to play. So I don't know if this is just trying to get Cole for 2 weeks ready to play, or if this is just a gamesmanship deal on Jeff Brohm's part, but I agree with you. I think Cole, from not only a pass game standpoint, but when Purdue wants to run the football, he's probably going to be very, very valuable. I would say the other valuable piece in that regard is how healthy and how close to 100% Matt McCann can be, because he had missed Wednesday, got back on the field Thursday, was on the practice field Tuesday. So I don't know if he just got a Veterans Day off, or Jeff Brohm continues to, develop NFL-style practices for his guys, which I think is really, really smart, late October and early November. But if Matt McCann's not close to 100%, I think that's going to be a major factor as well, because Ohio State can rush the passer from both sides. And Jeff Brohm has talked about if they're going to throw the ball vertically down the field and challenge Ohio State's secondary in that regard, and I do believe they're going to, they're going to have to pass protect for a little bit longer than they probably want to. Matt McCann's going to be a big piece of that. So, I think your tight end and your right tackle right now need to be as healthy as possible in order for Purdue to have any kind of chance of making this a competitive game, especially early on.
Your conversation with Kevin Noone, the publisher of BuckeyeGrove.com, coming up here in just a moment. Matt, we'll bring you back into the show to talk to him and talk to you a little bit later on as well. The weather could certainly be a factor in the game on Saturday. Let's bring in WLFI meteorologist Annie Brown to talk a little bit about that. Going to be a little bit windy in West Lafayette on Saturday. Annie, what can you tell us about the forecast?
Yeah, Kyle, just a little bit. How about I start off with the good news to get you going? For game day, we will start with dry, pleasant conditions. So great news for those traveling to West Lafayette for the game. However, those big changes to the forecast will move in by midday. Daytime temps will top out in the mid-50s before we are blanketed with cloud coverage in the wake of a cold front. Make sure you're tightening down your tailgating tents, because these winds out of the northwest, you're just saying, Kyle, will be becoming very powerful. We are seeing some of the gusts up to 45 miles per hour.
Woo.
And very impressive. And now, as this cold air starts to pour in, there is a possibility of 40% chance for showers. and then a slight chance that some of this rain could turn into a more of a wintry mix. So just when you think it can't get any better, these chances for showers, right? Chance for showers will drop off by the second quarter. So good news for those going to the game. But the brisk winds and chilly temps in the 30s will remain till the end of the game. So dress not only for the wet weather, but that bitter cold too.
Wow. Well, that sounds pretty miserable, Annie. I'd like to thank you, but no thanks.
Sounds bad. Painful forecasting this out.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Thank you, Annie.
You're welcome.
That's WLFI meteorologist Annie Brown with a windy and cool game day forecast. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we will bring in Kevin Noone, his conversation with Matt. That coming up here in just a moment on Golden Black Radio.
It's time to boiler up and join the Brahms squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, industrial and classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. The warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill, near the corner of 10th and Main Streets in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
It's time to break it down as we go in-depth about Purdue's opponent.
And welcome to an opponent, the week 7 edition of the opponent preview of the goldenblack.com preview show. I'm Matt Stevens, and with me today is the publisher and managing editor of BuckeyeGrove.com, part of the Rivals and Yahoo Sports Network, Kevin Noone. Kevin, we appreciate having you on, and we look forward to having you at Ross H Stadium on Saturday night.
Yeah, looking forward to making the trip. I can't even tell you how many times it's been that I've been out there. It's been a little while, and definitely been a bit of a house of horrors for Ohio State here in recent years.
Since 2013 is the first time that I think the two schools have even played. But let's start with the obvious, which is your Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback. It's been, for a lot of people outside, I think, the Ohio State program, it's been a little bit of a revelation in the sense of the start that Dwayne has gotten off to. And Haskins has really been able to, what I have noticed at least, very, very quickly, is transformed not only an Ohio State program, but an Urban Meyer offense into a pass-first type mentality. And Jeff Brohm mentioned that on Monday morning and during his press conference. What kind of transformation has it been to cover an offense like this from an Ohio State standpoint that just looks so dramatically different philosophically?
Yeah, we've only had a small taste of this type of offense in a three-game stretch in 2014 when Cardale Jones took over for an injured Braxton Miller and J.T. Barrett, and led the Buckeyes to a national championship, and then the Buckeyes went back to much more of the read option type of offense that people become very familiar with under Barrett, and before that with Braxton Miller. When you bring in Dwayne Haskins, it is a lot more of a passing offense, but I think a lot of that too is predicated by the fact that you still have teams loading the box, trying to take away the run against Ohio State, daring the Buckeyes to pass. and the Buckeyes are at their best right now while they're passing. And, you know, just a little stat for you, Ohio State has 3 400-yard passing games in program history, and Dwayne Haskins has 2 of them, and it's been the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I've noticed he could be on pace right now to break the Ohio State single-season passing record, I think, in the next 3 weeks. He's 4 short of having of number 10 right now, which is Bobby Hoying. And what do you feel like since he's won the job, I would say, either in the spring or early in the fall, what do you feel like has led him to having this much success early on, especially when, you know, I think a lot of people were still shaking their head at a potential inexperienced quarterback in Haskins, but a very, very talented young man?
Well, I don't want to take anything away from Haskins. I think Haskins has the arm to be able to make all the throws he has, that kind of gunslinger mentality out there where he's not afraid to throw into tight windows, and he's very smart and can make those quick reads. But I think a lot of his success rides upon the fact that Ohio State did not lose anybody out of the receiver corps last year. He's got a receiver room that's filled with fourth and fifth year seniors and fourth year juniors, and because of that, he has so many weapons to be able to throw it to. It's not a case of where we see teams where they have 1 or 2 options in the passing game and then a bunch of guys with 6 receptions. Ohio State has just a multitude of guys for him to be able to throw to and is able to roll guys in and out, and that gives Dwayne Haskins so many weapons to work with. I think that the combination of his individual talents and the talent that is around him has really led to a campaign of where he's now number 2 in terms of the odds for the Heisman behind Alabama's great quarterback.
Let's hit the defense real quick. An Ohio State defense that's middle of the pack in both pass defense and rush defense, but you know where they're not the middle of the pack? The most important stat, scoring defense. They're number 3 in the Big Ten. They hold teams to an average of less than 20 points per game. I know there's been maybe some concerns about this defense, but I'll let you take the floor. Is that are those concerns founded, or are those concerns just based off of Ohio State having potentially big leads, or having, you know, the ability to be able to know that they can score as well and feel confident in winning shootouts?
Well, I mean, the Ohio State defense kind of is who they is, and I think there is reason to be concerned.
Okay.
If you're an Ohio State fan. You take Nick Bosa off this team, which he's been off for several weeks since the TCU game when he suffered a lower core or a core muscle injury, and he's getting reevaluated this week. But, you know, there's a lot of belief that he may not return to the team, you know, maybe protecting his status for the draft, maybe just won't be ready. So you take away arguably the best defensive player that Ohio State has, and that you know, that shakes the defense up. And Ohio State's giving up entirely too many big plays. That's ultimately what a lot of this is coming down to. Just teams are going nuts with 40, 50, 60-yard plays. Ohio State has already given up 2 93-yard plays this year. They gave up a 93-yard play to Oregon State and one to Penn State. They've had 4 different ball carriers rush for more than 150 yards on them with Oregon State, Penn State, Minnesota, and trying to remember, Pierce was Oregon State, Anderson. Needless to say, they've given up a lot of yardage there. I think that there's some issues in terms of Ohio State being stubborn to make certain changes in terms of who they are. They say we are a press man team. We play man-to-man. Teams have been able to find a way to hurt them with the slant pass, and Ohio State still has not necessarily been able to make quick adjustments there. There are certainly concerns there. I mean, whenever I pick games this season just based on this defense, I'm already starting teams anywhere from 14 to 17 points just because we've seen this defense give up entirely too many big plays.
And I would assume that's the biggest concern going into Saturday night, with Jeff Brohm's offense being tied for third, and I'm doing a story on it this week, tied for third in the nation in plays over 40 yards. They have 17 of them already this year, and they're tied with Clemson and Alabama in that category. I mean, it's Jeff Brohm's hallmark has been big plays on offense and creating those, practicing those, throwing the deep ball in practice. That would seem like, you know, Purdue's best shot to make this a competitive game on Saturday night.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that I think that's going to be there, though, too, is that you can make the argument you make those big plays. I mean, Ohio State's offense has proven, too, that it can get out there. And I mean, it's maybe not going and doing three-play drives or anything like that. I think they're a little bit more comfortable 7-8-play drives, going 70 yards or whatnot. But, I mean, Ohio State's offense is going to be able to sit there and move, because this could be a really high-scoring game. But, yeah, you look at especially the first half of Ohio State's last two games, both at home with Indiana and Minnesota. I mean, they gave up an average in both of those games of 401 yards per game. But if you sit there and you look at the second halves of each of those games, it ended up being like 123 in the second half. But, you know, just play after big play after big play. And, I mean, it's hard to sit there and just circle one thing and say, this is why this is happening. You know, Ohio State, because of not having Nick Bosa, having those blitz maybe a little bit more, and teams are having, they're not getting to the quarterback. Teams are throwing to where the blitzer came from. The linebackers aren't necessarily taking great angles. The defensive backs aren't necessarily getting guys down on the ground or not even taking great angles as well, and that's what ends up leading to these big plays.
Is there a lot of concern, I'll get you out on this, with Ohio State's remaining schedule? You come to Purdue, you still have to go to Michigan State, and then obviously you have the game at the end of the year at home against Michigan. What is the level of concern that Ohio State can get through this unscathed and get to a playoff among locally and among the fans? Because it seems like, you know, you've gotten over two big hurdles, which was the TCU game and the game at Penn State, and this offense continues to roll for 30, 40 points a game, and it seems like there seems to be a cushion there if the defense can continue to develop and get better, even if Bosa doesn't even come back this year.
I think this game is going to really be a litmus test of what to expect going into November. The Buckeyes then get the open week following this game, and then have Nebraska, who has definitely had its issues this season. It's really going to come down to a two-game season if Ohio State gets through this Purdue game with Michigan State and Michigan there. I mean, there's a game with Maryland as well in College Park. But, you know, I think that if Ohio State is able to show maybe some life defensively against this high-powered offense and is able to not have to just completely sweat it until the end, or, you know, God forbid it, again, if you're an Ohio State fan, lose at that point, I think that there's going to be, you know, maybe some better feelings going into November, especially late November with Michigan lurking in the finale.
Well, Kevin, we appreciate your time, and we look forward to having you at Ross-Age Stadium on a Saturday night on a nationally televised stage as Ohio State comes in as a 13.5-point favorite. But, Kevin, we appreciate having you on the GoldenBlack.com pregame podcast.
Anytime.
Your neighborhood bar. 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day, sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights, and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there too with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
Wanting to know more about the real estate market in Greater Lafayette, give me, Kyle Charters, a call or text at 765-412-5217 or email at kyle@chartersteam.com. Part of the Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus, an experienced group of real estate brokers. I can help market your listing to sell as quickly as possible and put you in your next dream home. Email me at kyle@chartersteam.com.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With FirstSource Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with FirstSource's money management tools. FirstSource Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
This is the Golden Black Radio pregame show, the most in-depth guide to Saturday's game you'll find, featuring the staff of Golden Black.
And Kyle here with Brian Newbert to get a little perspective on Saturday's game. We'll also talk some football recruiting as well, as the Boilermakers picked up another 2019 recruit on Thursday evening. Let's start, though, with the game a little bit, Brian. There's been a lot of anticipation for this one. Feels like to me the sort of the most build-up to a game in recent memory. What's the last one you can remember that had this much hype? I think I have to go back to 2007, perhaps, the Purdue-Ohio State game, the last time Purdue was ranked. Curtis and Painter company were 5-0 against, I believe, a number 4 Ohio State at that time. Not sure there's much, though, in the 11 years since then that have sort of risen up to this height.
Right. Purdue's not played on very many big stages over the years. But they have had a number of games that have been maybe not as highly anticipated as this, but pretty highly anticipated. When you look at the Michigan game last year, the way Purdue had played coming into that, when you look at the Northwestern game this year, that being a night game, that being the season opener after Purdue did so much last season. I don't want to say the bowl game because it was a neutral site deal, but Purdue's had a bunch of these games now in the last 2 years. Missouri was one, probably. Obviously nothing like this. Purdue's not played a team this highly ranked, obviously, under Jeff Brohm, and they certainly haven't played one in years in which you can actually look at it like it's within the realm of possibility they win. I'm not saying Purdue's going to win tomorrow night. I'm saying it's not outside the realm of possibility. And when something's not outside the realm of possibility, that fuels the anticipation even more. So, this is the biggest stage Purdue will have played on in years.
Once the game is over, will it be fair for us to sort of evaluate Purdue and where it's at based on this game alone, considering Ohio State is a pretty quality opponent, comes in as a near two-touchdown favorite? I mean, is it fair to Purdue to sort of evaluate it and where it is in its rebuild based on this game?
Well, if Purdue's competitive, I mean, Purdue's playing really well right now. So I think the general expectation can reasonably be that Purdue will be competitive. I think you kind of have to see how the game goes. If it's a deal where Ohio State kind of has its way, depending on the nature of that could be as much a credit to Ohio State as an indictment of Purdue. Ohio State's really good, really, really good. And so I think you kind of have to wait to see how the game goes. If Purdue just gets blown off the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, then it's like, okay, we're in year two of a rebuild here. This is what we're working on. This is where we have to get from a line of scrimmage perspective. That still is an area where Purdue isn't to be. I think Purdue's got skill position players who belong on that field against an Ohio State. I think they've got some good young defensive players who belong on a field against Ohio State, some good older defensive players in Marcus Bailey who belong on a field against Ohio State. But obviously you aren't Ohio State from a personnel perspective. You're never going to be Ohio State from a personnel perspective, but that can't be the reasonable expectation. I think tomorrow night shows you just how far off you are. Not just from being able to compete in games like this, but from being able to win games like this. And obviously that's the ultimate goal. You know, when Mike Babinski first made the changes in football, he said something along the lines of, we need this one big transcendent national moment for our football program to take it from one level to another. You can kind of look at last season as something that got Purdue a lot of attention, and in the collective of it all, probably raised Purdue from one level to another, but they've not had that singular moment. They've not had that singular win in many, many years. This is obviously an opportunity to do that, but also one where if you don't get it tomorrow night, it's not like it's never going to happen.
Let's turn to football recruiting, as Purdue picked up a commitment on Thursday night from Kyle Jornigan that went over to Ohio to get that commitment, a 3-star from Youngstown. Were you surprised Purdue took another offensive lineman here sort of late-ish, I guess, if this can be considered late, even though it usually hasn't been historically, but maybe in this instance is, grabbed their fourth offensive lineman for this 2019 class?
Yeah, well, it's obviously a priority for Purdue. It's going to be a priority for Purdue in every class. You know, I just got done talking about the line of scrimmage and what the line of scrimmage means in the bigger picture of Purdue's rebuild, and it kind of takes me back to something Brohm said about recruiting once, where he said they will oversign the defensive line and the offensive line every single year because it's that big a priority. You want to make sure covered there. You want to make sure you have enough bodies. And I do think every year they're probably going to maybe sign one more defensive lineman, one more offensive lineman than that. They absolutely must. And I think this is probably a case of that. I think obviously scholarships are dwindling at this point. I don't even know how many Purdue has left, but you can probably count them on two or three fingers. And I think they probably just wanted a fourth offensive lineman all along. You get to this point in the game, you kind of have to reassess things. And when there's one sitting out there, you have to make hard decisions. They obviously like Kyle Jornigan a lot. They must like Kyle Jornigan a lot because there's a lot of other options left on that recruiting board right now that you could have taken from other positions. So this is a guy they recruited for quite a long time, had him on campus in the summer. I think they kind of won a game of musical chairs there a little bit too, because I know Kentucky was a big time player for him. Whether he was a priority at this stage of the game for them, I don't know, but he remained a priority for Purdue. And I think it was more a matter of choosing what positions would be, these scholarships would go to here at the end, than it is choosing the players. And obviously four offensive linemen now, that's a pretty robust class on top of the four they signed last year. They signed five, but only ended up with four. So that's eight over two classes. That's a pretty good number. And I think it's reflective of priority in terms of what Jeff Brohm and his staff are committed to dedicating their scholarship resources to above all else. As much as they're known, you know, for skill position, offensive players and all that stuff, they want to make damn certain that the offensive and defensive lines are taken care of from a resources perspective. And this kind of reflects that.
Purdue up to number 22 in the Rivals rankings for its 2019 class. In the Rivals era, that's pretty much uncharted territory for the Boilermakers, right?
Yeah, that's Mount Everest type stuff for them, in terms of where they've been. Now, those numbers will change, obviously, as everybody else fills up their classes. But for them to be even in that stratosphere, when you're number 22 right now here nearing the start of November, you're certainly in the ballpark to be in that top 30, top 35 here in a couple weeks. And even that would be pretty thin air for Purdue from a in terms of where it's historically been, especially where it has been prior to this coaching staff coming in. They've obviously transformed recruiting in just about every way you possibly can, and you kind of wish you could see the results of it right away in terms of these guys getting on the field faster, because you would like to know. I'm sure the program would like that instant gratification too in terms of paper translating to productivity, but obviously the true ramifications of how well they're recruiting may not be felt for a couple of years at certain positions, especially the lines. But obviously Purdue has had some freshmen come in this year and be pretty damn good. Obviously Rondell Moore being the one I'm talking about above all else, but Purdue's recruiting at a level it's not recruited at since Joe Tiller and his staff had a lot of success at Purdue. And there's no reason to think it's going to fall off. If Purdue can win a game like tomorrow night, that would change things even more. And it would probably take them from one level to another even still.
Much more on the site, including anticipated visitors for the weekend at goldandblack.com. Be sure to check that out. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Kyle.
All right, let's take another break. We'll be back. We'll bring in Alan Karpik, talk a little bit of Big Ten and historical about Purdue and Ohio State. We'll do that here in just a moment on Golden Black Radio.
It's time to boiler up and join the Brohm Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at follettspurdue.com.
Often, things are worth more than they seem.
For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, industrial and classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like the bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and a signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate and seasonal ingredients. The warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer-inspired cocktails and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event at the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill, near the corner of 10th and Main Streets in downtown Lafayette. Welcome to our table.
What else is going on around the league? Let's take a look. It's the Big Ten Roundup.
Kyle Charters with Alan Karpik. As we take a look at what's happening around the Big Ten in Week 8, let's pull out three games, Al, and take a look at those closely. A noon kickoff, a pretty good, big game in East Lansing is number 24, Michigan State. We'll welcome in number 6, Michigan. The Wolverines favored by 7 points, a lot on the line in this game for both squads. Michigan still probably feeling like it's got an opportunity with Ohio State still on the schedule to find its way back into the college football playoffs. Michigan State's been a little bit all over the place seemingly this year. How do you see these two teams lining up on Saturday?
Well, it's an interesting study because you have Michigan State has dominated this series, 8 out of the last 10. Ever since they were called Little Brother, I think that's pretty much changed. 1 out of 4 of their last 5. You know, it's interesting because I really didn't expect Michigan State to go to Penn State and win. It did that. It now comes home. Michigan had a huge win last week, dominating. You know, Caron Higdon and Shea Patterson really got that offense going. I think conventional wisdom says Michigan should get the job done there, but Michigan State's had their number.
Not a whole lot of great games on slate in the Big Ten. Let's take a look at Maryland and number 19, Iowa. The Hawkeyes now up to 19th ranked. They're favored by nearly 10 in this game. The West is sort of, speaking of interesting studies, the West is because it just feels like it's sort of wide open for maybe a handful of teams over there, perhaps Purdue included, but Iowa is most definitely among that group.
No question. I mean, Iowa has a very favorable schedule. Now, Maryland's sneaky. I mean, I don't know what to take of Maryland. They played some people well for a while. They played Michigan actually well for the first part of the game, and then though that score didn't look lopsided. But, you know, Nathan Stanley has been good. Their defense has been great. You know, Iowa's ranked 5th nationally in total defense, Maryland 17th. So you wouldn't think you'd have a lot of points on Saturday. But I do think that Iowa's kind of in the catbird seat in some ways. Now, they have that loss to Wisconsin. But assuming Wisconsin loses again, boy, Iowa is in a good spot to make its way to Indianapolis. But, of course, Iowa has to go to Purdue, and they have this game this week, and they also will play Northwestern, too. So it's going to be interesting down the stretch for the West. Not that many people will be paying attention, except for teams in the West, and that's what's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
A 3:30 kickoff at Indiana as number 18 Penn State travels down to Bloomington. The Hoosiers looked pretty miserable last week. Alan, what happens if Indiana looks pretty miserable again this week?
Well, it's going to be interesting because there's a miserable index in this game. Penn State is reeling after consecutive losses. No one thought that after the bye week loss and the elite speech by Coach Franklin, so to speak, did not go over well because they laid an egg in the last few minutes against Michigan State. You know, Indiana has to find a way to get to 6 wins. And you look at it, they've got Minnesota, they go to Maryland, they have Michigan, they have Purdue. I'm not saying that they get this game. It would be a surprise to me if they beat them. I don't know what happened to Indiana last week. That surprised me if they got beat by 26 points by Iowa, a team that's not really all that good offense. I guess Nathan Stanley happened to him with six touchdown passes. But this is, Indiana's just is going to fight like heck every year to get to six wins just because of the division they play in. And this is a game that I just don't think they get, because I think Penn State will flex its muscle. But I don't know where Penn State is mentally, and that's what's going to be the interesting storyline for both teams in this game.
That's a look at the Big Ten in Week 8.
Let's go back in time. With a historical look, here's Alan Karpik.
All right, Al, we heard from Annie Brown a little bit earlier about the forecast for Saturday night's game. I did not know that the wind could potentially gust to plus 40. I guess 30 miles an hour for some reason seems a little bit more reasonable than 45. Purdue versus the wind. What comes to mind for you in sort of wind aided or hampered, more likely, and wind hampered games over the years?
Well, and she was talking on Friday morning about sustained 30 mile an hour winds. Now, if that happens, I don't know. I can't remember a game in Ross-Ade where it's been that windy. Now, I'll believe it when I feel it, so to speak. I do remember a game about the time you were coming on board at Golden Black 2004 at Northwestern, an extremely windy game up there, and Purdue lost that game in the last minutes, kind of just kind of hung around and kind of Northwestern scores late in that. But, you know, there have been windy days. I know at the Minnesota game last year when the storms came in and that game was delayed, it got a little bit blustery. And there have been games last year, I believe, or 2 years ago against Wisconsin in November when there were about nine people, and I mean nine, in Ross-Ade Stadium for that game. I remember that being a very blustery day. But doesn't make for great conditions, and I hope – really for both teams, you get that thing down to 15 miles an hour. I just think it makes for better football.
Purdue's had some home success against Ohio State, maybe more so than anybody else in the Big Ten here over at least the last couple of decades. What are some of your memories in Ross-Ade Stadium of Purdue facing Ohio State?
Well, everybody remembers, and they should, about Seth Morales and the Holy Toledo Pass. But, you know, every time Purdue beats Ohio State, it's monumental. 2004, Kyle Orton comes, you know, Brandon Kearse plays the whole game. Orton comes in for the last set of downs and or last possession and leads him downfield to a victory over Jim Tressel. Not a great Ohio State team. 2009, Joey Elliott and the legendary Aaron Valentine really beat Ohio State soundly in Terrell Pryor. The Buckeyes ranked seventh, and that was the last time Purdue had beaten a double-digit favorite. 2011 was a bad game against two really pretty kind of bad teams. Luke Fickell, the coach at Ohio State at the time, and in the interim, and it was Robert Marf getting an overtime. Purdue's most recent overtime victory, if that's my memory is correct. But I go back to 1978 and 84. Those were two huge games. 40-year anniversary of Jim Young. Jim Young will be in attendance of the Hall of Fame coach who coached the Boilermakers back then, and, of course, a lot of his players. That was a huge program turnaround game, a 27-16 win over the last game that Woody Hayes lost on the road as the Buckeyes coach, or at least on a true road game. And that one was very memorable, as was the 84 win with Rod Woodson and Jim Everett leading Purdue to that victory over a number two, the last time Purdue's beaten the number two ranked team in 84, the Boilermakers beat the Buckeyes.
Here's how bad my math is, or perhaps I'm getting older than what I realized. Al, I wrote down 30-year anniversary of the Jim Young 1978 team will be here on campus. As you just said, that's 40 years ago. But the,
that
you know,
is
they,
40.
They got
you weren't even
win.
Born yet.
I was close, but not quite. That team will be back together on Saturday.
Right, and Pete Quinn, of course, the radio analyst, he is the Pied Piper of getting guys together for reunions. But they're having a big group. I know on Friday they have a golf outing. They're going to be on our Golden Black Live show as well and be present. And Jim Young, Hall of Fame level coach. Of course, he was at Purdue for 5 years, goes to Army. Here's a guy that changed the Big Ten by bringing passing, goes to Army and runs the Wishbone. Just an extremely intelligent, interesting man who's had a fabulous life at about age 84. But I know it's special that he'll be back in Ross-Ade Stadium He's got a lot of Jeff Brom and Jim Young from an intellectual level, very similar, very smart guys and great football guys. And then, of course, that's a special thing that he'll be back for the game on Saturday night.
Thanks, Al.
All right. Thanks, Kyle.
That's Alan Karpik with a historical look at Purdue and Ohio State on Saturday. Let's take a break. We'll bring Matt back in, break down more of the Buckeyes and the Boilermakers. We'll do that in just a moment on Golden Black Radio.
Your neighborhood bar, 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day. Sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there too with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
Looking to list your home? Give me a call or text at 765-412-5217 or email at kyle@chartersteam.com. Part of the Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus, we offer a specialized marketing plan that will get your home sold and allow you to buy the next in a timeline that fits your needs. Again, email me at kyle@chartersteam.com.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
Broadcasting from Golden Black World Headquarters, north of Purdue's campus, this is the Golden Black Radio Pregame Show.
And Kyle Hitt, Charters here with Matt Stevens. Hey, Matt, a little over and under. You've won the last 2 weeks. How about that?
I believe, according to the movie Major League, that's what we call a winning streak. I'm not confident at all we're going to get to three in a row, but we'll give it our best shot.
Yeah, last week's was, you might have to remind me of the exact yardage. I think you had A.J. Bush at 80-something was the over-under somewhere in there.
I think it was 86 was his, yeah, and I had 85.5 as the over-under. And the thing about it was is that, oh, I actually did look this up, but we could have given you the subtracted, because I know you were hesitant about it because they subtract the sack totals from the rushing yards. I don't still know why college football does it. I think we're both in tow on that one. I gave you that one back, and he still didn't get to 86. So that's how good of a job that Brett Purdue's defense did against the rushing quarterback, and quite honestly, holding Illinois' entire offense to 69-yard rushing. So go ahead.
How good a job Purdue's defense did and how bizarre an offensive game plan it was, I think, for the Illini. Because they seem to want to throw the ball a little bit more than what we anticipated that they would want to, especially early on in that game. Okay, so we got to move on here. He didn't. All right, let's take a look at this game on Saturday. I'll give you a number here. And I've sort of bounced this one back and forth a little bit. We know Ohio State without its star defensive end and Nick Bosa, but that the Buckeyes have still been able to get after the quarterback. They rank number one in the Big Ten in sacks, right there at 3.5 sacks per game. So let's set the number there, 3.5. What do you think? Do the Buckeyes get to David Blough more or less than 3.5? Take the over, the under there. I feel like that's going to be a pretty darn critical area for Purdue on Saturday night.
I'll go over because here's what I think is I really think Purdue's going to have to throw the football a whole bunch. David Blough still has a propensity to hold on to the football a little too long. I think that could give me about 2 sacks. I think you give me 2 more in a sense where if Purdue has 60 or so many, you know, if David Blau drops back 60-plus times, I don't think 4 is definitely an unreasonable number for Ohio State to get to him and for Purdue to still have success throwing the football, which I think they're going to do. So, yeah, give me the over. I'll take the over. I think 4 is probably a reasonable number.
You know what might help me out Saturday night? The wind. And the wind. Yeah, I mean, if Purdue might get, I mean, if it is what they're forecasting, if it's 30 plus and gusting to 45, neither team's going to want to drop back a whole lot of times, especially if you're going one certain direction or the other. So, you know, we'll see how much of a factor that is. I'll take the under. We'll see where that gets me. Maybe I can get off this losing streak. All right, key matchups for the game. And we talked about that one. I think that one's a key. The other one, certainly, Matt, has to be whether Purdue can get to Dwayne Haskins, the quarterback for the Buckeyes, and in what fashion Purdue can get to him. Can they get to him without hampering the back half of their defense so much that he's able to take advantage too regularly? I mean, I think that more than anything else is going to be a key point for Purdue's defense.
You know, and I think you can take some lessons if you're Nick Holt from the matchup against Drew Locke a few weeks ago, that the three-man rush needs to be put on the shelf and almost never used, because I think they found out, you know, rushing with 3 and dropping 8 in coverage still didn't work out very well for anybody involved in a Purdue uniform. So I don't get the impression that's going to be used. I also get the impression that coming out of that game, you know, there was a conversation with Jeff Brohm and Nick Holt about getting more aggressive with the defense. So I certainly think you could see Purdue taking more chances. They've got to, I think Nick Holt's going to come Saturday night with the idea of Ohio State's going to hit shots anyway. They might as well do it while we're trying to go get quarterback with, you know, a 5-6-7-man rush. Because at that point, at least, I'm giving my guys a chance. And so I think you could see a lot of blitzes from Cornell Jones, Derek Barnes, Jacob Thieneman, those types of guys, so that you can account for still some developmental pieces that you have at defensive end. And I do think what the defensive ends did really well last week, though, which we can translate, is if when they don't get all the way there, I felt like A.J. Bush was having to throw from very, very vulnerable and awkward angles because of the height and quite honestly, the wingspan of a Kai Higgins and a Giovanni Revere. So if you can just make Haskins uncomfortable, you know, Kyle, we get this PFF data all year long now. He's completing at less than 45% of his passes when he's under pressure. And he's completing at 70% or more when he's got a perfect pocket. So I really feel like Nick Holt has obviously seen those numbers, and he has said, look, I'm going to have to bring some people, and we're going to have to get home. That's the only way we have a chance to get stops. And I really think based on the statistics, you would have to think Purdue's trying to get to third down, because when they get to third down, they're the best defense in the Big Ten, believe it or not. So in order to do that on first and second down, I think you're going to see some pretty exotic blitzes coming from Nick Holt this Saturday night.
All right, quickly here, because we're almost out of time. Predictions for the game on Saturday. I'll go here quickly. I think that Purdue can hang in there for a half into the second half. I think the emotional wave early will help the Boilermakers out. But a lot of times when that happens, talent wins out in the end, and this Ohio State team has found a knack for making plays at the end of games. I just feel like offensively Purdue will have trouble keeping them in check. A big play here or there down the stretch will give Ohio State a narrow edge. I think Purdue keeps this closer than what Vegas thinks it will be, but in the end Ohio State wins 31-28. Who do you have and why?
Give a lot less amount of points than even I do. I think it's going to be a shootout. I think Ohio State wins the shootout because I think they just have more weapons on offense, specifically at wide receiver, than Purdue can handle. But I do think that Ohio State's vulnerability to deep shots is going to keep Purdue in this game for 4 quarters. I think Ohio State wins 45-35. And I think it's going to be an absolute shootout on Saturday night. It's probably going to be a long football game. But I also think that you're going to see the two best offenses potentially in the Big Ten. And I think Ohio State just simply has more weapons for Dwayne Haskins to use than David Blau has on the outside. And that's I think, the difference in the ballgame. And so I think Ohio State wins 45-35. And I think a lot of Ohio State fans are even – I don't think this is a win for Ohio State in the sense that I think their fans are going to shake their head and go, what are we in for in November when we have to face Michigan State and Michigan? And so I think there's going to be a lot more concerns from the Ohio State standpoint than concerns from the Purdue standpoint after a 10-point loss.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, that'll do it for our podcast for this week. A thanks to our sponsors, Follett's, Purdue Federal Credit Union, the East End Grill, the 6th Street Dive, the Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus, and First Source Bank. Thanks as well to the staff of Gold and Black, Matt Stevens, Brian Newbert, and Alan Karpik. For them, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Gold and Black Radio.